Insanity. Tune in Friday, December 13th from 8 to 9 a.m. on KBOO, your community radio.
Responding to listener and community requests, we are engaging in a trial period of broadcasting the Tom Hartman Show from 4 to 5 p.m. each weekday. We take seriously the feedback we have received from listeners, non-listeners, KBOO members, and volunteers. This trial period is both an attempt to present the program, which is currently unavailable on broadcast media in the Portland area, and to solicit feedback on how appropriate this program is for KBOO. Please call 503-231-8032 or write to program@kboo.org with your opinion.
This is KBOO in Portland, where the time is 4:01 p.m. Stay tuned right now for the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman here on the news. You need to know this. Last night, Republicans in the U.S. Senate stayed up all night to delay a vote on a federal appeals court judge. The vote to approve Judge Nina Pillard happened at 1 a.m., and several other nominations will be considered before the upper chamber leaves for vacation next week. Republicans say that they will delay every vote as long as possible to punish Democrats for the so-called nuclear option, which prevented the filibuster from being used to block certain federal appointments. Because they can no longer completely block the president's appointees for federal courts and agencies, Republicans are determined to use up to 30 hours of debate for each nominee to slow down the process. Just to put this in perspective, the Senate Republicans did not force all-night debates when considering immigration bills or food stamp cuts or many other important pieces of legislation. But they think blocking the president's choice for an appeals court is worth holding up the entire legislative process. This Congress is the least productive in history because of obstructionist tactics like this, which are more about childish vendettas than about doing the people's business. We elected this president, and it's his job to appoint qualified people to courts and federal agencies. It's the Senate's job to approve or deny those nominees based on their qualifications and then get to work on all the other pressing issues our nation faces. If Republicans in the Senate want to spend all night debating an issue, why don't they make it one that Americans actually care about? Otherwise, they're simply wasting our time and our taxpayer dollars to play politics. In screwed news, America's pensions are under attack. Politicians, corporations, even our courts are chipping away at retirement benefits and promised health care that workers paid into throughout their careers. For decades, cities, states, and large corporations have skipped out on making payments to employee pension plans and looted pension funds to shore up budgets or pad their balance sheets. And the courts have gone along with all of it by allowing companies, and now cities like Detroit, to declare bankruptcy to screw their workers. Karen Friedman of the Pension Rights Center said, "The assault on retirees is greater now than at any other time. We're seeing it in Detroit. We're seeing it in states that are trying to get rid of good pension plans. We're seeing it in major corporations that are transferring pensions to insurance companies." She said, "We're even seeing it in Congress, where members are being heavily lobbied to introduce legislation that would allow multi-employer plans to cut retirement pensions. The attack on workers has left wages stagnant and union membership declining, so now they're going after the only thing we have left, our retirement. We simply can't let that happen." In the best of the rest of the news, millennials could be the next great generation. According to a new Pew Research study, our nation's youngest voters have progressive views on social issues, immigration policy, and even believe that the government should do more to solve our problems. This is a direct contrast with their older, whiter voters who tend to be more conservative and who believe the government is already too involved in things they believe should be left to the private sector. The millennial generation may just be the generation that helps us usher in a new deal. And they're the reason why Republicans have gone to great lengths to keep young people from voting. From closing voting precincts at colleges to making college ID an unacceptable form of identification, the GOP keeps coming up with new ways to keep millennials away from the polls. But they can't do it forever, and eventually these young voters are going to get their say. When they do, our country may just find its way back to a government that works for the people and not the corporations. According to Radcast.org, radiation levels are holding steady around our nation today, with only a few areas rising from yesterday's numbers. Near the East Coast, Taylor's South Carolina is sitting at 41 counts per minute, spikes to 64, and Chicopee, Massachusetts is at 42 with spikes to 66. Midwest is reporting elevated readings with Colorado Springs hovering at 61 with spikes to 86, and Frederick, Wisconsin at 47 with spikes to 70 counts per minute. Southwest is also reporting some concerning spikes with Chino Valley, Arizona hovering at 53 with spikes to 77, and Henderson, Nevada at 47 with spikes of 72 counts per minute. The Northwest is slightly calmer with Vancouver, Washington at 38, spiking to 57, and Seattle at 30 with peaks of 41. Radcast.org reminds us that their alert level is 100 counts per minute, and they're monitoring levels closely to provide us this important information. And finally, after the 2012 elections, the Republican Party's so-called autopsy report showed that they needed to find a way to connect with minorities. Well, one of the best ways to do so may be to actually make sure that there are actual minorities at your minority outreach events. Last week, Senator Rand Paul was asked to speak at the Michigan Republican Party's African American Engagement Office. But as pictures from the event show, pretty much everyone who showed up for the event was white. Even in Detroit, which is roughly 83% African American, it's not that surprising to see Rand Paul have an issue connecting with minorities. After all, he's spoken out against long-term unemployment benefits, even though the African-American unemployment rate is substantially higher than white unemployment. He's expressed strong criticism of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Just a word to the wise. If the Republican Party of Detroit, or any city for that matter, wants to connect with minorities, they may not want to invite a speaker who says private business should be able to discriminate and who employs staffers who nickname themselves the Southern Avenger. And that's the way it is today, Thursday, December 12th, 2013. I'm Tom Hartman on the news. I've been recording promos for radio stations. It just kind of felt like I'd already been on the air. Anyhow, it's the day before Friday the 13th. So, and Megyn Kelly is on TV saying that Jesus was white and so was Santa Claus. And, hey, it's just a fact. It's a historical fact. Kids, get used to it. And so what better day than to talk about how in 11 states, you and I, with our taxpayer dollars, are supporting creationist curriculum, homeschool curriculum, with a creationist bent, which is going to kneecap, in my opinion, this country and these children should they ever decide to go into the sciences or pretty much anything other than going to Liberty University, where you can get in without even having to take a GED. Eric Hovind is with us. He's the president of Creation Today. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us. Why would anybody want to do this to their children? It seems like it borders on child abuse. To be teaching children science in the context of religion, when religion and science are two completely different areas, or for that matter, to be teaching religion as a statement of fact when there are other religions that believe very different things, and there's no comparative religion really in this curriculum, or to be teaching kids that basically Jesus was a political conservative in the modern mold and that liberals are somehow evil people. I don't get it.
Well, obviously you and I come from opposing views then, because I would disagree strongly with some of the statements you made. Why should we let Christians teach their kids what they believe about creation and do that in science? We find creation scientists all over the United States. It hasn't kneecapped or handicapped them whatsoever.
Well, I'm sure they can find a few, billionaire right-wing Christians who want to fund them, particularly those who own big oil companies who want to fund them to promote a science that suggests that global warming isn't going to screw up the world. But, that's a very, very limited marketplace. And my primary objection is that in 11 states, our tax dollars are paying for this stuff.
Well, let me tell you what's even worse than that. In all 50 states, tax dollars are going to tell the kids that they are cousins of bananas and that they all evolved from rocks 3 billion years ago. That's being forced down the kids' throats in all 50 states.
So you think that the minerals in your body did not start out as rocks?
What I'm saying, we did not evolve from a random process over billions of years.
How do you know that?
Originally coming from the Earth, which is made out of rock, according
right.
to the evolution worldview.
How do you know that?
No. Because we actually have revelation from God that tells us how it really did happen. He created the world, and there are far too many problems.
Okay, see, I have no problem with you believing that, and I have no problem with you promoting that in a church or in a religion class, but if that's the way you're going to teach science and you're going to do it with my tax dollars, I have a big problem with that.
Well, I have a big problem with my tax dollars and your tax dollars going to tell the kids that they all evolved from a rock, that the Big Bang is what created everything from nothing. That's what they're teaching. Nothing exploded.
Well, no, it was a singularity. It wasn't nothing.
Well, where did the singularity come from? And what do they say? They say nothing.
Well, that's one of the
magazine of 2002 in a New American magazine. Alan Guth, a famous scientist, has been writing about this for some time. He says everything came from nothing.
And well, I, you know, that is, A, that's inconsistent with my understanding of you know, the general theory of relativity and the theories
I'll
on the Big Bang. But B, so what? I mean, there's an enormous amount of evidence that the universe has been expanding for 13.8 billion years. You're trying to suggest that it's only, what, 6,000 years old?
6,000 years old. That's exactly right.
Okay.
And there's lots of evidence that supports that. I was just talking to Bill Nye at an event he did at the University of Florida. Bill Nye brings up the human population being a little more than 7.1 billion today. And in 1964, when he was at the World Fair, it just crossed the 3 billion mark.
Right.
When it's an exponential growth curve.
Right.
It's very easy to do the math.
It has
you
been an exponential growth curve ever.
Today, it goes back 4,400 years.
Except for the fact that the reason why we have the exponential growth curve is because in 1865, Colonel Drake drilled the first commercial oil well in Titusville, Pennsylvania.
That's not why we have the exponential growth. Would
sure
occur,
it is.
No matter what.
We're creating food out of oil. We're doing it all over the world. We're transporting, you know, food with oil. We're fertilizing the whole green revolution was based on
the exponential growth. Will happen no matter what.
Okay, so
well, I mean, just do the math. Mathematics makes it very simple. Trace it backwards. It started 4,400.
All right, so this is the kind of stuff that you want to teach kids as science.
Now, what's interesting is I'm not the one advocating that the public school system teach this, because that is science.
We're not talking about public school system here. We're talking about homeschooling that is funded in these states that offer vouchers, that is funded with money that would otherwise only go to public schools.
Why are you
funded with taxpayer dollars?
Other side. Why won't you say, you're right, I'm forcing you, Eric, to pay for my view to be taught? You can't.
Well, because it's not my view. It's science.
13 billion years ago. That's not science. That's a historical idea, but it's not science.
No, Eric, it is science. I hate to break this to you, but science, you know, one of the principal tenets of science is that you never speak or rarely speak in absolute certainties. You speak in the context of, you know, this seems to be the, I mean, it used to be that they thought the universe, when I was in school, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, they said, you know, the universe is 15 billion years old. Now they've got it fine-tuned down to 13.8 billion. You're always, you know, fine-tuning these things, but science doesn't declare certainty the way that religion does. You're teaching religion, not science.
So you're saying science can't be certain about gravity.
Science can't be certain about anything. That's one of the core tenets of science is that certainty is, you know, essentially unscientific.
Right. So
everything is always open to question.
Whereas
religion, which is not at all scientific, is all about certainty. You know, hey, God said this. That's it. You don't have to think about it anymore. Now go on with your life.
No, here's what's going on, Tom. Science says we should question everything. But what they don't let you question is the evolution paradigm. Despite the fact, and I could give you hundreds of examples.
Well, what science doesn't let you question is the cockamamie idea that has only really been around since the 1880s, that the universe is only 6,000 years old. That's, you know, scientifically, that's both stupid and demonstrably wrong.
How come the magnetic field is getting weaker, putting a maximum age of 25,000 years on it? Comets only last less than 10,000 years, and we've still got comets going around our solar system. How come we've got the human population at 7 billion instead of exponentially more than that right now? The truth is, the science, the math, what we really see happening today, does not support millions of years.
These things you're throwing out, Eric, are not...
We talk about this and educate people.
Are neither accurate nor scientific.
It's very scientific. Why? How come there are 20, I think, six doctorate degree professor level teachers at just at Liberty University, since you mentioned Liberty, let alone the...
Because Liberty University lets you in without even having a GED.
So basically, if they don't believe in evolution, then they're stupid. That's what you're saying.
I'm saying that they can't... I would not want a scientist
that about 60% of Americans
who doesn't believe in evolution
60% of Americans
doing my science.
So 60% of Americans that believe that God created the earth in the last 10,000 years, there's
60% of Americans are not going to have a shot at being scientists or engineers. And the fact that you're trying to expand that number is really tragic, I think.
Engineers don't use the evolution theory. Doctors don't use the evolution theory.
No, but they use the scientific theory. They use scientific principles.
The fundamental questions of life.
And they use science.
They use science, and evolution is not part of science. So why we would let a bunch of people, why would we be upset about...
Eric, I'm leaving you with the last word, which you just had. Eric Hovind, creationtoday.org. Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what do you think? Should we be using our tax dollars to fund homeschool education that the world is 6,000 years old? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Nate Sweet is on the line with us, producer of The Big Picture. Hey, Nate, how you doing?
How's it going, Tom?
Also, I should say, international television star.
Not a star just yet.
Hey, you've been on my program. You're a star.
Well, I appreciate it.
Okay, yeah. Don't contradict the boss. Okay. on our TV show tonight, you won't be a star. I'm not that kind of boss. On our TV show tonight, we're going to start out with Papantonio.
Right, we're going to be talking about lawyers, guns, and money with Mike Papantonio. We're going to be talking about the one-year anniversary of the Newtown Massacre and what's been happening with the gun control efforts since then. Have they succeeded? Have they not? What can we look forward to in the future over the next coming year with regards to gun control? We'll be talking about continuing Republican obstruction in the Senate. They forced confirmation hearings of Nina Pollard, Obama's nominee to the D.C. Circuit Court, to go on for 30 hours. She was finally confirmed last night at 1 in the morning, so we'll be touching on that, whether or not things have changed since the nuclear option. And we will also be talking about the Murray Ryan budget deal with PAP and get his take on it. You know, there are a lot of people that are happy that it's a compromise budget, but preserves sequester, and it preserves austerity.
Now, did I see a headline that said Harry Reid said we'll stay in session until Christmas, if we have to, if the Republicans keep this up?
I have not seen that headline, but I am glad that Harry Reid is sticking to his guns this time around. He's shown a lot of strength in the Senate over the past couple months, and it's encouraging to see.
Yeah, he has. I'm very impressed by it, too. I think the entire country is just like waking up and basically waking up and puking. It's like, you know, we've got this Bush hangover. You know, we spent 8 years, you know, just drinking straight vodka, you know, 24/7. And then the first couple of years of the Obama administration, we were just kind of in a daze, and now we're waking up going, whoa. Anyhow, that's probably a terrible metaphor, but the Pope is a lefty.
I think he's more than a lefty. He's borderline socialist from what some of his arguments about economic...
Borderline. Jesus was a socialist. Jesus was a communist, actually. He was a communalist. The entire community, when he told Judas to go, you know, pay the guy off, they went to the common purse. Everybody pooled their goods and belongings together. These guys were communists.
I don't know if the Pope will be comfortable calling himself a communist, but he has spoken out pretty strongly against economic inequality.
And against capitalism.
Yeah, directly against capitalism. It seems like he's directly speaking out against, you know, unrestricted capitalism that we've seen since the Reagan era. And he's done that again with his message for the World Day of Peace.
So you guys are putting together a great little list of the best of the Pope's quotes that we can put up on full screen graphics and argue with Neil.
He's been spewing some awesome stuff for the past couple weeks, so we'll have some stuff in there to see how Neil, who's generally spoken out as a pretty conservative Catholic, and will grapple with that.
Mm-hmm. It should be an entertaining conversation.
And, you know, speaking of the Pope, he's sort of become Pope at the right time, because we'll also be talking to Neil about how the millennial generation is the most progressive generation, really, that we've had since the greatest generation during World War II.
And I think for the same reasons.
Right.
I think Great Depressions produce progressive generations.
Yeah.
Real simple. In fact, it's a core principle in my book, The Crash of 2016. Nate, you are a millennial, right?
I am.
Uh-huh. Say proof. Nate Sweet. You are my proof that the universe is 4,000 years old, because I have one anecdote. Anyhow, Nate Sweet. Thanks a lot, Nate.
Thanks, Tom.
We'll be back 20 minutes past the hour. Talk media for the sane among us. It's the Tom Harbin program. Welcome back. And, so creationists are, Bobby Jindal has given them money, and 11 states altogether, and they're trying to get, money in all the states. The people who put this together is called Accelerated Christian Education, this one. I'm going to sneeze. Hang on just a second. Excuse me. It's that time of year, I guess. Anyhow, the people who put this thing together, it's called Accelerated Christian Education, claim that their curriculum is used in 192 countries and 6,000 schools worldwide. That's frightening. Again, I have no objection to this kind of stuff being taught in Sunday school. I mean, it's just fine. It's the appropriate place for it. In some other Sabbath day, sacred day school, somebody is being taught that you shouldn't wear clothing made out of two different kinds of fabric. Or somebody else is being taught, in some other religion, is being taught that it's a violation of the First Commandment to have a picture of the prophet. And somebody else is being taught that, the universe grew out of the navel of, it wasn't Shiva. Who was it? Whoever it was. Anyhow, out of a lotus flower that came out of the navel of the head god. And somebody else is being taught that, maybe there's not even a god. Like the Buddhists, right? But Buddha really, he was enlightened. He knew that everything is all one thing and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's like, I don't have a problem with any of that stuff being taught. Somebody's, probably teaching their kids about the flying spaghetti monster, although I'm guessing everybody does that does it tongue-in-cheek, but who knows? But I just have to play this for you. You can play audio through the board from my computer, right? Machino? Okay, we had a computer crash earlier today. This is Megyn Kelly on Fox News. Listen to this. This is from yesterday.
Move on, because I want to get to this other topic. So in Slate, they have a piece on .com, Santa Claus should not be a white man anymore. And when I saw this headline, I kind of laughed, and I said, this is so ridiculous. Yet another person claiming it's racist to have a white Santa, And by the way, for all you kids watching at home, Santa just is white, but this person is just arguing that maybe we should also have a black Santa. But, Santa is what he is, and just so you know, we're just debating this because someone wrote about it, kids. Okay, I wanted to get that straight. But Jedediah, when I read the piece, the author...
So anyhow, then she gets into, how the author of this piece grew up black and said, there was no Santa there for me. I mean, I just kind of felt like I was on the outside. And her first guest, and therefore lets her play Santa with a penguin. And her first guest says, I don't have such a problem with the penguin thing. I think, that's kind of a cool idea. And you read the piece and you really get it, that it must be tough growing up black in a world where Santa is white. And then Megyn Kelly comes back with this.
Jesus was a white man too. But, it's like he was a historical figure. I mean, that's a verifiable fact, as is Santa. I just want the kids watching to know that.
Yes.
But my point is, how do you just revise it?
Okay, so now I really don't believe that Megyn Kelly's a smart woman. I don't believe that she's asserting that Santa was a historical figure. She's saying, for you kids. I mean, this is Fox News. They're going out of their way to make sure that if there's a five-year-old in the room who's watching TV, that their illusions of Santa Claus are not shattered, and they You know, I actually remember when I was around six or seven. It's one of my earliest memories. My parents took me for a ride, because I had three younger brothers at that point in time, so they took me out alone, take me for a ride. It was just before Christmas time, to tell me that there was no Santa and invite me to help them organize Christmas for my two younger brothers. And I think they figured out, they thought that I had figured it out by then, but I hadn't. And I remember being shattered by, what, there's no Santa? I mean, just shattered. And you wonder what kind of, you know, lifetime consequence that revelation has for some kids. What, my parents have been lying to me all these years? My entire culture has been lying to me? I think I'll join the SDS. I mean, you know, it's like, is there a cause-effect relationship? I don't know. But in any case, Megyn Kelly, you know, she's trying to make sure the kids are not hurt by this. I think, frankly, kids who are old enough to consume Fox News or talk radio probably have already figured this out. I'm not so worried about it, frankly, right now. But in any case, so I don't think that she's asserting so much that Santa actually is a definite historical figure. Maybe St. Nicholas. But here's the thing. St. Nicholas was a Turk. Turks have dark skin. You wouldn't call them African-American, but Turkey is, and Turkey is arguably at the very southern part of Europe rather than the northern part of Africa. But Jesus was born in the Galilee, which is like the south part of the Middle East, which is like right abutting to Egypt, which is northern part of Africa. And Jesus was almost certainly not an Ashkenazi Jew. He was a Sephardic. He was almost certainly somebody who looked Semitic, who looked more like, you know, the modern day Iraqis and Afghans and people who in some places, like on Fox News, would be described as people of color. Not necessarily dark color, but color. So what's the deal? Why do white people feel so strongly that they have to hang on to white Santa Claus? What's wrong with acknowledging, A, that Santa Claus could be any color for anybody because he's not a historical figure. He's a cultural creation. And B, that Jesus, even the historical evidence for the existence of Jesus as he stands, and some would argue is fairly weak, but whatever, that Jesus wasn't at least a Northern European WASP, the way that he's characterized in so many crucifixes and paintings and things.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I mean, can't we now in 2013 all grow up and say teaching creationism to kids is child abuse and, you know, and Jesus wasn't white? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, Bob in Marcells, Illinois. I think you're making one of the most important points, Bob. Hey, welcome to the program.
And I'll tell you something. Creationist scientists and scientists from Liberty University don't scare me too much. But what really scares me is what our former president did to the Justice Department with civil servants that can't get fired, at least not easily. They don't serve at the beck and call of the president. And the Justice Department was loaded up with these people that were from a law school that didn't say Liberty right on the title, but it was a division of Liberty University. And it just got loaded with them.
Oh, I know. And there were two young women who were, I just remember them as young blondes. And I don't mean that in any anything other than that's what I remember, who had done some pretty remarkable things in the Bush administration, taken some positions that were just breathtakingly stupid. Monica Goodling was one of them, with regard to law. I'm sorry, I can't remember the details of it, but I do remember the whole Liberty University lawyers have stocked the Bush administration. And I'm with you, Bob. It scares the heck out of me, too. Thank you for the call. Darren in Darrington, Washington. Perfect,
hey,
perfect town for your name, Darren. Hey, what's up?
I'm a little nervous. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller, and I was listening to that creationist idiot, and I've followed him on the Internet for a couple of years now, and I can't get over how dumb he is. I tried to write down my thoughts, and I'm going to do it as fast as I can.
Okay.
Okay, so first of all, the 6,000-year, this is just general information, the fact that he believes that the Earth was created only 6,000 years ago means that he believes that the Earth was created after the invention of glue and after the domestication of the dog. Second thing,
right.
I disagree strongly with the concept of a Christian child. Richard Dawkins made a very, very compelling argument for we should never, ever call any child a Christian child or a Muslim child or a Buddhist child. It'd be the equivalent of saying, well, this child is a socialist. They have never, or a capitalist or what have you, they have never had the opportunity to take in the information. They are simply not mature enough to take in the information, chop it up, look at it, and decide for themselves what they are. So, you know, if you ever hear somebody say this is a Christian child, as opposed to saying this is a child of Christian parents, do me a favor. Hit him in the head with a pan. Next thing.
Your point is really well taken. Your point is really well taken. And let me, you know, that's the A. Here's the B that comes from it. This is an effort to convert children to Christianity so that when they do become of the age of choice, the amount of information and the nature of the information that they will be so heavily skewed toward Christianity that they will choose to become fundamentalist Christians.
Well, it wasn't a Jesuit who said, you give me a child to the age of seven and I'll give you the man?
Yeah, well, I don't remember who it was, but it was some famous figure, but long time ago, yeah.
I'll try and make it as fast as possible because I know you got other people on the line.
Oh boy,
everything that guy uses today comes from science. His phone comes from science. His car comes from science. Science works. Engines run. Planes fly. That's why science works the way it is. The problem that I have with, that I've always had with religious people, I've gone to many religious schools. My mother really wanted me to have a relationship with God, kept pushing me into Christian schools, and I just kept getting thrown out of them because I was one of the few kids in the school who actually read the Bible. And the problem is that when you seed your mind and your reasoning faculties and say God did it, that ceases all scientific exploration. We would not have anything if their mindset was allowed to take root. And the last thing that because I know you got a whole bunch of people, the last thing I wanted to say was there's a rant by Neil deGrasse Tyson on the Internet when he was at the Skeptics Conference. He does this really great rap about fundamentalism and Saudi Arabia, because for many years, Saudi Arabia was the crossroads of scientific inquiry, mathematics, great strides through mathematics.
Yeah, 1,000 years ago.
Was made, 1,000 years ago from, I think, I want to say the year 900 to 110 AD. There was that 300-year period, and there was a guy, there was a lot of reasons why it fell, but there was a guy there named, I want to say, Al-Ghazali, who was a Muslim cleric who was basically the Augustine of the Muslim world. He codified a whole bunch of Muslim writings and basically said, you know, here's how you be a good Muslim. You know, this is how you have to live your life to be a good Muslim. But one of the things he put down was that manipulating numbers was the work of the devil. And that, after 110 AD, that completely undercut the feet out of all scientific inquiry and all scientific research. And Saudi Arabia and the Muslim world has not recovered since.
You're right.
Fundamentalism is dangerous.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, very well said, Darren. Thank you very much. In fact, hang on just a minute. Let me see if I can push this button successfully. I'm going to put you on hold because Shano just said that he wants you to be the guy who gets the book today, an autographed copy of Crash of 2016, my new book. So Darren is on line one, actually. It's unusual to have line one be line one, but there he is. Gary in Chicago. Hey, Gary. on line two.
Hey, Tom, good to chat with you again. I was on a couple of days ago. It boggles the mind that you have all these fundamentalists, as Darren pointed out, who don't want to believe in science. And I'll give you a perfect example. When Ronald Reagan came down with Alzheimer's, he was never for stem cell research, nor was Nancy. As soon as he came down with Alzheimer's, all of a sudden they're a big proponent of science, stem cell research. We need science to save us. If, in fact, they are true believers in God, then science should have no part because God's destiny would determine what the outcome would be.
Well, if they believe God to be a God who is, A, omnipotent, and, B, actually answers intercessory prayer. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's lots of variations on that.
Yeah, jumping off on the creationist that was on your program, I jumped in the middle of a conversation. Has he ever heard of carbon dating and the carbon isotope?
Yeah, I'm sure that I've seen their explanations for that. They've got it all figured out. You know, oh, the machines are miscalibrated or something like that. I don't know. And Gary, I got to move along, but thank you. Excellent point. Oh, you wanted to mention something about the multi-universe theory?
You know, I was just going to say, with regards to he was talking about the Big Bang, there are two schools of thoughts out there, real briefly. One is the Big Bang theory that the universe was created in an instant. Another one is that, and this has been talked about by Alan Guth, who he referenced, there's two schools of thought, and they're in the process of actually testing which one is the correct theory. The other is called the multiverse theory, where they're basically almost an infinite number of universes. They call them brains. They're basically relatively flat. And on occasion, every, I forget how many hundreds of billions of years or so, these universes bang into each other. That creates the energy for what appears to be a Big Bang. Now, they're at the cusp of actually testing which one of these is correct.
Right. Yeah, and last week, I think it was Our Geeky Science, or it was maybe it was a week ago today anyway, I was talking about this new study that they've done looking at ancient background radiation. And it looks like you're familiar with the bubble theory, the foam theory, the multiverse as foam as opposed to as planes. It looks like the outer edges of our universe expanded in ways that were not consistent with there being nothing around us. That in fact, what we were doing was bumping into other bubbles. And so the outer edges of our universe sort of are indented like a golf ball. And not quite like that, but they didn't use that metaphor in the article. But you know, they pushed up against other things, and so there are these like dents around the edges. And so it seems like, you know, our universe is one among many.
Right. One other quick point that you mentioned: they have actually mapped out the radiation of the universe that is in total agreement with all the equations that they have come forth with. So. Yeah. This is science for people to say that, oh, the Earth has only been here for 6,000 years.
Yeah, it's just wrong. Yeah, Gary, thank you for the call. Bill in Northampton, Mass. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Well, Tom, I'm so glad you're in this conversation today. It seems like only one theme, but it's a really powerful theme. And I was just taken in your conversation with this person who identified as a creationist with how close you and he actually came to having a real conversation, especially when we got to the part where I was kind of saying, gee, I wish Tom would say, well, okay, so you have a before man. What about a before God? I know that's a classic sort of tedious conversation about understanding.
His answer would be God was eternal.
Right.
I mean, I've had that debate before with these guys.
Right. Well, but the other part about it, the other part about it though is the part where it's heartrending to find people who are so certain that they're not compelled by the mystery of uncertainty.
Yeah, that's well, and that was my point: is that science deals always in uncertainty and the edges, and you know, and tries to push to the edges of uncertainty to resolve uncertainty, whereas religion will brook no uncertainty. Religion is, this is the way it is, period, end of conversation. And those are two very, very different things. And I remember, who was the famous pop science guy? We had his wife on after he died. Anyway, he talked about how just, you know, as a child, looking through a telescope into the universe was his equivalent of a religious experience. And it's mine. I mean, this just, you know, the great mystery. We, you know, the stuff we don't know. Looking at these pictures from the Hubble telescope, it's like, wow, you know, this is incredible stuff. Bill, thank you for the call. Thanks for listening to WHMP. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Carl Sagan was his name. He'd been on our program, a proud atheist, and his wife. I did a long interview with her, which is over at PodJockey.com. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Gene in Santa Barbara, California, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Gene, what's up?
Well, I got a great idea. And Gene Tyburn's my name. And I like to think of myself as a poet. In any case, I've had a wonderful idea, floated it, and I think you're going to love it. And I'd like you to do something about it because you have the connections to do it. You know, they've just found a planet three times the size of Jupiter. You know that, Tom?
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Well, are you talking about the one that is like all the math is inconsistent on it? They can't figure out why it's where it is relative to that star?
Yeah. It's spectacular. Gigantic. Yeah. And I think we ought to call it Mandela.
Mandela. Oh, name it after Nelson Mandela, you mean?
Right. So he'll never be forgotten.
Uh-huh.
That universe, that planet is going to become, that planet's going to be mentioned for the rest of our existence.
Right.
And that would be an honor sufficient and equal to his saving several millions of people by stopping a civil war.
Yeah. Or stopping the apartheid movement.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, that you know how that could have ended. And, yeah. And I think it's an honor befitting him, and I'd like to see you might decide to mention it a few times and see if we can get something going like that.
Okay. Well, Gene, I'm not adopting that as my idea, but you just shared it with millions of people, and hopefully others will. I think it's a great idea. I don't object to it at all. I think it's a great suggestion. Thank you, Gene. Thanks for sharing that. Randall in Howe, Texas. Hey, Randall, what's up?
Hi. How you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I just like that Mr. I like to say bovine, and I know he's not here to defend himself, but
yeah, let's not pick on.
He reminds me of a bovine. Well, in Africa, these archaeological find, they found a human remains that they identified it as about a 4 foot tall female. They carbon dated the skull at 4.5 million years.
Right.
So.
But see, what if God was just like messing with the scientists' brains by miscalibrating the machine or changing how radiocarbon isotopes decay or whatever? And so that number is just meaningless.
Well, okay, the Inuit or whatever Eskimos that. Or in Alaska that came across the land bridge, their tribal communities can trace their ancestry back 11,000 years during the times that a woolly mammoth was still around.
Yeah, they have the stories.
They hunted woolly mammoths, and that was 11,000 years ago.
Yeah, but again, they could just be wrong. Or it could be that God created them 6,000 years ago, complete with the stories. Do you get how weird this stuff is? I mean, this is what they're teaching our kids.
Yeah. Well, first of all, here's a real good philosophy to me. Religious beliefs, no matter what belief, atheists, everyone and everything involved should not be mixed with politics. Because when you mix any kind of religion, beliefs of any other group of people with politics equals war.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And Thomas Jefferson would have absolutely agreed with you, which is why he was, absolutely. Thank you, Randall. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Tim in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for all you do. I really appreciate the fact that you don't lose your temper when you're talking to some of these folks and that you have a very level, serious discussion.
Well, I'm trying to role model for all of us because we all have people like this in our families or our workplaces, and it's useful to talk back.
I'd like to comment about the creationist.
Yes, sir.
And what I would like to say is when you have an argument with a creationist who demands or desires or insists that priests be allowed into science classes to preach creationism, they must also be ready to allow a scientist to appear in church on Sunday during Mass on a podium preaching evolution. And if they're not ready for that, they need to shut the hell up about putting priests in science classes. And
that's a good point. Tim, good point. Tim, thank you very much for that. Jeff in Rogers, Arkansas. Hey, Jeff.
Hello, Tom. I was just totally amazed about the creationist guy. I mean, 6,000 years ago, got a little yabba-dabba-doo in his history and everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm telling you that he believes it. And there are people all over this country who believe this. And, and I don't have a problem with that. Unless, they're teaching a 10-year-old who wants to grow up and be a rocket scientist. And that 10-year-old is going to have a real problem when he gets into a science class with no foundation or no understanding of scientific principles. And, in fact, the opposite,
Well, I have a problem with homeschool being abused like that because there's people that are in, like Alaska and stuff that have to depend on because they don't have the resources like that. Mm. And then you have somebody that, if their church believes so greatly in that, well, why don't they fund their own idea?
Yeah, well, I'm with you. And Louise and I homeschooled one of our kids, at least through the last half of her education, or her grade school, would it be grade school education. At her, this was her decision, not ours. In fact, we were a little taken aback when she came to us and said, that's it, you guys are going to homeschool me. But she did it through an online homeschool, oakmeadow.com, I think was the name of it. And it's a Steiner school, as I recall, a Waldorf school, and it worked really, really well. And she traveled around the world with us. But we weren't trying to teach her how to be religious or anything. I mean, it was a good education. But we also didn't go to the state of Vermont, which is where we lived at the time, and say, you guys should pay for our daughter's education. Because if she had been in the public school, you would be paying for it. So therefore, give me a voucher. We didn't do that. We, fortunately, we had the means to pay for her education as homeschooled. And it's just these folks who are saying to the state, to the taxpayers, to you and me, you should pay for me to teach my kid at home. I think it's just wrong. Public schools are free. They should be free. They're out there. We need to expand them and strengthen them. And if somebody wants to homeschool their child or the child wants to be homeschooled, I understand that. But I don't think that we should collectively have to pay for it. I'm with you, Jeff, on the pay for it part. Greg in La Follette, Tennessee. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, man. It's wonderful topic, and I appreciate you using the word child abuse because I'm in total agreement that it's tantamount that I even go further. The whole creation, the whole Genesis book is child abuse to teach children, women are responsible for evil. It starts in my way of thinking, it starts the screw over of fresh, noble, divine minds, and they're turned into these misogynistic creatures. There's a 50-50 chance, but it just happens to be females or beguiled by the serpent, so they get off to a great start. They're knocked down a peg, and dominion, this idea of dominion. Mm. We people are so obsessed with taking over because we, after all, have dominion over everything. Genesis is an absolute, at least, what kills me about our society? At least they tell us that Santa Claus is nonsense. Somebody should tell us that Sunday school, sorry, by 12 years old, we were just kidding. What kills me is that people go through this life, adults with their Sunday school eyes, they never rearrange their map of the cosmos and of their soul, and they look through the world with those same Sunday school eyes. When I was 10 years old, I smelled something rotten in Denmark with these stories.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just, they're simply allegory. And we have a, you know, it's this idea, the most unattractive thing of Christianity will always be that it's right. It's always, you know, the Tibetan monks, the first thing they tell their students is, we might be wrong, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's never this absolute belief that everything's absolute and there's no other way to God.
Yeah, well, Buddhism is unique in that regard. And also, I believe Buddhism is the only religion that has never had a war declared in its name. And I suspect that there's a relationship between those two things. The other thing about Genesis, Greg, there's two creation stories in Genesis, and they're different. And there's some really, really good scholarship on this. I am of the opinion that one of those creation stories was the story of an old hunter-gatherer tribe, and the other was the creation story of a later agricultural tribe. And that the creation story of the old hunter-gatherer tribe was a warning about doing agriculture. Don't go do agriculture. This is a very kind of Daniel Quinn Ishmael worldview, but I believe that you can find this in the Bible. And it's the story of Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel. That Cain was Abel was the shepherd. You know, he was part hunter-gatherer, part pastoralist. And Cain was the farmer. The farmer kills the hunter-gatherer. This is a warning, and then by the way, goes off to the next village to marry a woman, you know, to start a family. Well, where did the next village come from if Adam and Eve were the first people? I mean, you know, there's some logic problems here. But so, and therefore, it's just a creation story for that tribe. It's not the story of the creation of all humanity. It's the unique story of the creation of that tribe. And every tribe has a story like that, of how that tribe was created. Greg, thank you for the call. But anyhow, I just find that whole thing fascinating, and I'm now wandering into comparative religion and, you know, Daniel Quinn and Elaine Pagels and all, you know, my favorite writers.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
And now, the day's top headlines from Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, followed by the locally produced KBOO Evening News. On tonight's news, we'll hear about a new law in Michigan that requires women to buy rape insurance. We'll also get a report on the new leaked documents from the American Legislative Exchange Council and hear about the problems with nuclear power at the Columbia Generating Station. All that and more, beginning at 5 o'clock. Stay tuned.
The White House says enrollment in Obamacare insurance plans continues to improve after a problem-plagued first month. Around 250,000 people signed up in November, double the month before. More than 800,000 people have also signed up for Medicaid eligibility. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius touted the improvements in an appearance before Congress.
Now, as more Americans give healthcare.gov a second look, they're finding the experience is night and day compared to where we were back in October. And they're responding by shopping for plans and enrolling in greater numbers.
Despite the troubled rollout, the White House says it still expects to meet a goal of 7 million enrollees by March. The Pentagon's announced a media blackout on information about hunger-striking prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. The latest wave began in February and grew to as many as 106 prisoners over the summer. The Pentagon now says it'll stop disclosing how many prisoners are on hunger strike and will reject all media requests for information. A military spokesperson told Al Jazeera, quote, "It's the strikers' desire to draw attention to themselves, and so we're not going to help them do that." The latest statistics to be released show 15 prisoners are on hunger strike, up from 11 last month. The head of the National Security Agency appeared before Congress Wednesday to defend the bulk collection of U.S. phone data. General Keith Alexander compared the mass sweep of phone records to the running of a library.
If you look at all the information that is out there, the billions and billions of books of information that are out there, there is no viable way to go through that information if you don't use metadata. In this case, metadata is a way of knowing where those books are in the library and a way of focusing our collection, the same that our allies do, to look at where are the bad books. From our perspective, from the National Security Agency's perspective, what we do is get great insights into the bad actors overseas.
A proposal from Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy would end the bulk collection of phone records without a court order. But Alexander told lawmakers that even if approved, the measure would not necessarily end warrantless collection, depending on judicial interpretation. Opposition leaders are refusing to meet with the Ukraine president, Viktor Yanukovych, in the aftermath of an intensified crackdown demanding his resignation. Dozens of people were wounded Wednesday when riot police stormed a large protest encampment in Kiev. The officers eventually withdrew after demonstrators refused to leave and ultimately grew in size. Yanukovych has faced weeks of protest over his decision to strengthen ties with Russia over the European Union. In Washington, White House and State Department officials said the U.S. is considering sanctions against Ukraine.
The United States was appalled last night by what happened in Kyiv. The Ukrainian government's response to peaceful protests over the last 2 weeks has been completely unacceptable, and it's difficult to understand why they have decided to move against their own people repeatedly with force, rather than engage in a real dialogue with the opposition.
All policy options, including sanctions, are on the table, in our view, but obviously that still is being evaluated.
Protesters in Thailand have cut off power to the compound of Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawatra amidst the country's worst political crisis in years. Dozens have stormed the compound in the latest protests over alleged government corruption. Yingluck dissolved parliament and called new elections for February earlier this week. But demonstrators are seeking her immediate resignation. She's not in her offices and gave a national address today from a separate location. In a blow to the opposition, Thai military leaders have turned down a meeting request from protest leaders. The top commander of Syria's Western-backed opposition has fled across the border to Turkey. The move by General Salim Idris of the Free Syrian Army comes after fighters from the Islamic Front seized his forces' bases in northern Syria. The move prompted the U.S. to suspend all non-lethal aid to Syrian rebels. White House spokesperson Josh Earnest confirmed the freeze.
We have seen the reports that Islamic Front forces have seized the headquarters in question and warehouses belonging to the Supreme Military Council, and we're obviously concerned by those reports. We're still gathering facts and consulting with General Idris and the Supreme Military Council staff to inventory the status of U.S. equipment and supplies that have been provided to the SMC. As a result of this situation, as you pointed out, the United States has suspended all further deliveries of non-lethal assistance into northern Syria.
A prominent Syrian lawyer, human rights activist, and leader of the anti-government protest movement has been reported missing in a rebel-controlled Damascus suburb. Razan Zaytuna disappeared from her apartment along with her husband and two other activists after receiving threats from Islamist groups. Following the chemical attack in Ghouta earlier this year, Zaytuna appeared on Democracy Now! To describe the carnage.
We started to visit the medical points in Ghouta, to where injured were removed. And we couldn't believe our eyes. I haven't seen such death in my whole life. People were lying on the ground, in hallways, on roadsides, in hundreds. There haven't been enough medical staffs to treat them.
Witnesses say Hassan Zaytuna's apartment was found ransacked with laptops and other belongings removed. You can go to democracynow.org to see all of our interviews with the Syrian activist. The families of two Spanish journalists have come forward to reveal the pair's kidnapping in Syria. Journalist Javier Espinosa and photographer Ricardo Garcia Villanova were reportedly seized by al-Qaeda-linked rebels in September. Espinosa's wife, Monica Prieto, urge the kidnappers to set them free.
But the idea that all the journalists covering Syria are risking their lives for the Syrian revolution, for the Syrian people, for the Syrian freedom, democracy, etc. So I think no Syrians in the Islamic State, they should think carefully about what are they doing for the revolution, for the Syrian country, for the Syrian freedom by kidnapping journalists.
The families say they've come forward because of an impasse in talks with the pair's captors. The two were apparently trying to leave Syria near the border with Turkey when they were seized. Mexico's Senate has advanced a controversial measure that would overhaul the country's energy sector. Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto wants to open the state-controlled oil company to investment from foreign multinationals after 75 years of nationalization. Jesus Zambrano of the leftist party of the Democratic Revolution said that if given final approval, the measure should go before a national referendum.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. The time is 5 o'clock. Next up is the evening news. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. Open daily December 18th through December 24th for the Festival of the Last Minute. Saturday Market offers handmade arts, crafts, and other gifts created by artists from the Pacific Northwest and is located at Southwest Ankeny and NATO Parkway in Waterfront Park. Information at PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
Every year, a diverse and eclectic group of musicians and dancers come together for one night for a performance which celebrates and strengthens Portland's experimental music and performance arts scene, Untoward. Untoward is an annual benefit show for the Creative Music Guild, whose mission is to promote experimental improvised music by presenting concerts, workshops, and other events that bring together internationally recognized musicians with local performers. This year's lineup includes Grammys with Noah Bernstein and Dan Sutherland, Kayon Gaskin and Noelle Stiles, Dragging an Ox Through Water, Eternal Tapestry, and KBOO's 2013 Artist-in-Residence, Marissa Anderson. Untoward 2013 will take place this Saturday night, December 14th, at the Secret Society Ballroom, located at 116 Northeast Russell Street in Portland. Doors are at 8 and the show begins at 9. Your attendance will help support the work of the Creative Music Guild, promoting and fostering experimental artists in the Northwest for over 20 years. KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of Untoward 2013, this Saturday, December 14th at the Secret Society Ballroom. Every year, a diverse and eclectic group of musicians and dancers come together for one night for a performance which celebrates and strengthens Portland's experimental music and performance arts scene, Untoward. Untoward is an annual benefit show for the Creative Music Guild. This year's lineup includes Grammys with Noah Bernstein and Dan Sutherland, Kayon Gaskin and Noelle Stiles, Dragging an Ox Through Water, Eternal Tapestry, and KBOO's 2013 Artist-in-Residence, Marissa